Hey everyone, we're taking the week off. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. This week, we're re-releasing our episode on the Santa Claus bank robbery, a holly jolly tale of true crime from our home state of Texas.
You can also head over to our Patreon for some bonus content, like our new mini-sodes, including a recent update on the Murdoch murder saga and a true crime headlines episode discussing an update on Love Has Won, as well as a controversy surrounding a judge in Dallas. But don't worry, y'all, it's not Judge Christie. We also have a very sweet mini-sode coming up for you on the fruitcake fraud in Corsicana, Texas.
We're going to have some sweet bonus footage, too, of...
just watching you eat that fruitcake.
Of me eating some of that fruitcake as well, and some hot takes on it. We also have three live stream events coming up. Tonight, December 15th at 8 p.m. Central, we are doing our monthly Q&A. Tomorrow, December 16th at 8 p.m., we are performing The Wheel live, where we'll spin an actual game show wheel and discuss whatever we land on. I have a feeling there's going to be some good holiday fun stuff on there. And on December 22nd at 8 p.m. Central, we are doing Hallmark After Dark, where we make comments over a cheesy Hallmark movie. I'm so very excited about this.
Our list is long. We gotta get it down to one. And just so you know, the Hallmark After Dark is a special event for all Patreons at all subscription levels. So you go over, if you're already a Patreon, you just log in. And if you haven't signed up yet, you can even subscribe as low as $1, $5, whatever you feel. And they'll get you admission to our Hallmark After Dark. And that is December 22nd at 8 p.m. Central. Head to patreon.com/sinisterhood to join all the fun. And be sure to stick around after this week's episode for your Patreon shoutouts and our thank you corner.
We'll be back next week with an all new episode and a special holiday surprise. Thanks so much. Keep it creepy.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better hold your hands up high because Santa has a gun and is robbing the place. In 1927, a Texas town was shaken up at Christmas when Saint Nick and friends pulled a heist on the local bank. A manhunt ensued, and the local citizens ensured some form of justice was finally served, no matter the cost. This week's episode is The Santa Claus Bank Robbery.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
All I think of when I think of Cisco is the thong song. But now I got a new memory of Cisco.
Oh, that's they have a Cisco Fest every year and everyone wears thongs in Cisco, Texas.
Oh.
Dumps like a truck. Mm-hmm. That's the song that man it'll bring the house down.
That's one. When did that come out?
Gosh. Oh man, I want to say when I was in high school, probably late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, because I was in early years of college, so that tracks.
Mm-hmm. And it was like TRL days.
Yes, yes, yes. If we had a party today, God, I wish, and put that on, it would bring the house down.
Oh, people get so excited.
Because it's one that everyone knows, but you haven't heard in forever. Mm-hmm. But you immediately are like, let me see that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's always a person at karaoke who sings it that they know the verses, so they're proud of themselves, but they forget the repetitive nature of the chorus. And a good karaoke song can't be too, you know, they need to cut that down.
Yeah.
And a good karaoke jockey will fade you out before you have to say thong, 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 like for 10 minutes.
That's
what seems like an hour.
What? Karaoke songs, whenever you're singing one and then there's like a long guitar break, is there anything more awkward than standing on that stage and waiting for that to be over with?
Didn't you and I on our Fleetwood Mac, you were like, well, I didn't realize this was like a 15-minute solo. I can't remember what Fleetwood Mac song it was.
It was a deep cut. It wasn't something, I think Laura Goff was like, y'all need to sing this. And we had been imbibing, and it sounded like a great couple. Time.
That was the Christmas
still good.
Party.
Yeah, it was still fun, but there was a was it
yeah.
chains?
Oh, was it the chain?
Oh, yeah,
Jinx.
Yeah, it's a great song. That's not a deep cut, but it's a great song, but it does get very repetitive at some point, and we neglected to remember that at the time.
But it's got such a it's got a good, like,
that build up is great too.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
God.
We killed it still.
We did.
With the lull of the instrumental.
Well, what would Santa Claus's karaoke song be, you think?
This Santa Claus would be "Bitch Better Have My Money," I think, because
that should be all
Santa's, different.
I think. Bitch
he
better
wants
have
to get
my
paid
cookies.
Back.
Yeah. So this week we're talking about a robbery that happened in Cisco, which is probably 4 hours from here, would you say?
Five hours? About 150 miles from us.
Oh, so I'm way off. Closer to two and a half or so. Yeah. And it's, I did not know about this. And surprisingly, it's like the most infamous bank robbery in Texas, ensued the largest manhunt the state's ever seen. But somehow I had never heard about it.
And especially, we get sent a lot of crimes that have weird aspects to them. And not only is this Texas and legendary, but it's a Santa costume. So, I mean, I don't know how this slipped through our cracks, but we started looking for Christmas-themed crimes, digging through the old Texas archives. And I literally went on newspapers.com and typed in crime, Christmas, and then narrowed down the search.
There you go.
And, yeah, there we go.
This will come out. So we're recording a bit early right now. So we're preparing for the arrival of the babe.
The baby.
So we are, I think this will come out 2 weeks after we're actually recording it. This will come out on the 23rd, right?
I believe that's right. Yes. Festivus.
So Festivus, yes. So
happy Festivus.
So Merry Christmas Eve to all that are listening. Happy Festivus. Happy, I don't know when Hanukkah starts. That's my bad.
That's December 10th. I just saw it in my planner.
So it will have been
already
over by then.
But I hope it was great.
Yes, I hope you had 8 crazy nights and they were amazing. Well, let's get into it. Cisco, Texas was a small town of about 8,000 people in 1927. Texas's first female governor, Ma Ferguson, had granted hundreds of pardons just before leaving office in January of that year. Among those pardoned was 24-year-old Marshall Ratliff, described by the Fort Worth Telegram as
a tall, sinewy man with close-cropped, dirty blonde hair and a history of troublemaking.
Ratliff had recently been convicted for robbing a bank in Valera, Texas, with his brother Lee. However, with the pardon, the two men only served a year of their sentence. Ratliff was now out and looking for a way to get rich. Naturally, he concocted a scheme to rob the local bank in Cisco.
I went down a Ma Ferguson rabbit hole because I did not know much about
her. What a great name.
And her husband had been governor, and then she became governor, and her platform was basically, and I think he was ousted on corruption, and her platform was, I'm just going to do what my husband says, so it's like you're voting for him.
Oh, well, it was a different time back then.
It was the 20s. But yeah, she let a lot of people loose.
Yeah, at her and husband's request.
Probably, yeah. And the Ratliff brothers were definitely troublemakers. Mm-hmm.
Initially, Ratliff and Lee planned on robbing the bank together, but Lee had already been arrested again, throwing a monkey wrench in the criminal family affair. Undeterred, Ratliff recruited 32-year-old Henry Helms, who, like Ratliff, had also been convicted and pardoned by Governor Ferguson. Next, they got 22-year-old Robert Hill, who had previously been arrested for burglary. Finally, they recruited 33-year-old Louis Davis, a relative of Helms, who had a clean record, was down on his luck after losing his job of 6 years just weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, Helms was a family man, husband, kids, and the glass factory job just booted him right before Christmas.
Davis, you mean?
I'm sorry, yeah. Louis Davis, yes.
Yeah, and what's sad is he got roped in at the last minute. They had tapped another guy who had a record to be the safecracker for their whole heist, but he came down with the flu a few days before and had to bail. Which those things, it's like one of those things, sliding doors moment.
Little...
Yeah, like how that must have changed his life. But this poor guy, as we'll see, gets the worst of it. And he was the only one that was just like, I'm just trying to get some money for some presents for my family.
And I'm pretty sure they told him it'll be super easy. It's not going to be a violent job, mm-hmm. as they always say.
Yes, and his one heists. Request was, I just don't want there to be any shooting.
Well,
yikes. That Christmas wish did not come true. Before being tracked down for the Valera bank robbery, Ratliff had lived in Cisco. Years prior, his mother had also run a cafe in the small town. Concerned he would be recognized during his heist, Ratliff decided he needed a disguise and borrowed a Santa suit from Miss Midge Tellett, his boarding house keeper in Wichita Falls, a city roughly 200 miles from Cisco, where he was residing at the time. Ratliff and his crew then stole a Buick from their home base and headed to Cisco for the job.
The sad thing is Midge Tellett made that Santa suit. She hand sewed it for her husband to wear at Christmas. Mm. And this guy's like, let me just borrow it for a day. I'll bring it back.
I don't think she got it back. Yeah.
I don't think.
The men headed toward the bank around 12:45 p.m. on December 23rd, 1927. The weather was nice, so the streets were crowded with holiday shoppers. Ratliff was let out of the car a few blocks from the bank, his Santa suit concealing the many guns he had brought along for the job. As Helms, Hill, and Davis drove to the alley adjacent to the bank, kids rushed toward Ratliff, excited to tell Santa their Christmas wishes. When one onlooker asked Santa if he represented the nearby department store, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported Santa curtly replied,
I don't represent a store. You'll find out soon enough who I represent.
That's red flag number one, that this is a Santa that maybe we don't want to fuck with.
He's aggressive as shit. You pull your kid away from that and you're like, I don't think that's the
you're
real
like,
Santa.
First of all, why did Santa get let out of a Buick with three very shady looking men who now are like in the alley of this bank?
Slow rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Forward Star Telegram, basically, they did this big spread on it in the 80s, kind of like on one of the anniversaries. Mm-hmm. And they said the weather really screwed them because if it had been bad weather, he would have just kind of slipped in the bank and it probably wouldn't have been as crowded. But since it was like, I mean, it was in Dallas today. It's, you know, mid-December.
It was 73 today.
Yeah. It's like in the 70s. It's sunny. It's nice. Everybody's out. And so you're going to attract attention mm-hmm. if it's Christmas, the day before Christmas Eve.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All the kids are trying to hug you and you're like, I got to rifle in there. Stop.
They're like, Santa, is that a gun? Are you happy to see me?
Neither.
Yeah. As Ratliff made his way toward the alley to meet up with the others, 6-year-old Frances Blazingame begged her mom to take her to meet Santa. Mrs. Blazingame obliged and led her daughter into the bank shortly after Santa and the other men entered. Happy to see what he assumed was jolly St. Nicholas, one of the bank employees paused his conversation with a customer to say,
Hello, Santa.
Santa, however, was not interested in pleasantries.
Yeah, Santa's grunting and rifling through his belly for a handgun.
The accomplices drew their guns, forcing bank patrons and employees to the ground. Helms held a gun on a bank teller, demanding,
Stick him up, big boy,
according to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Ratliff then took a teller and two customers into a back room to search them for weapons. He found none, but he took the bank's automatic pistol from the teller's desk and stuffed it alongside the others in his Santa suit.
It's a baller teller, just a gun on your desk.
Dude, this was literally the Wild Wild West back then.
Yeah, it was tough times working at a bank.
Mm-hmm. In the commotion, Mrs. Blazingame grabbed Frances and headed for the bank's side door. Despite the criminals yelling at her to stop or they would shoot, she shoved Frances into the alley, ran out behind her daughter, and screaming for all to hear,
They're robbing the First National Bank!
According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, one of the locals within earshot was Police Chief Bit Bedford, armed with a riot gun and two officers for backup. Chief Bedford ran for the bank.
The description of Chief Bedford was that he was a huge guy, like 6'5", 250, like huge dude, like well-known to just... He doesn't fuck around.
Mm-mm.
And I'm pretty sure he's the one. Is it him or the other one that ends up joining the search that had taken in Ratliff for the other bank robbery? It may have been the other guy, but they're all kind of connected
was the
in
other
a
one because, well, as we'll see, Chief Bedford doesn't make it that
no,
far.
No, the previous bank robbery, the Valera
oh,
one.
Oh, the Valera one.
He knew him and he was a troublemaker in town. Yeah. So I think he would have known. So. But yeah, they said Chief Bedford, I believe a riot gun's not even a deadly gun. It's like a rubber bullet mm-hmm. gun. And he was just like, I'm going to go stop him. He was ready.
It's interesting they had those back then.
Who knew?
Yeah. Not me.
I did not. I had to look it up.
Meanwhile, Santa had forced a bank teller to open the vault and had begun filling his sack, marked Idaho Potatoes, with $12,000 in cash and $150,000 in non-negotiable security papers, a sum equaling over $2 million in today's money. Helms, Hill, and Davis had been busy rounding up the hostages and moving them into the back room. Among them were two young girls, 12-year-old Laverne Comer and 10-year-old Emma Mae Robertson, who had been at the bank that day to check the balance of their savings accounts.
Like you said, again, the wrong place, wrong time. You know, your life takes a turn. Well, I'll go to the bank today versus going the day before.
These sweet little girls that have a savings account at 10 and 12 just want to see how much their pennies are accruing.
Exactly.
And then this happens.
I know. And I just imagine them being like, oh, Santa's at the bank, and how quickly your emotions turn. Plus, I think there are several ways to tell if somebody's not a real Santa. One, their coat is not filled with a belly that shakes like a bowl full of jelly, but instead a bunch of guns.
Yeah, shaped like a bunch of armor is under
just
there.
Looks like whenever, you know, the villains in a movie open up their cabinet, they have guns all hanging up. And number two, the bag, I feel like Santa's bag is traditionally red velvet with like gold cords.
Red, not maroon.
Not Idaho potatoes.
Not a burlap Idaho potato sack.
Not a dirty sack. I don't think it is.
Also, what a different time to just drop your 10-year-old off at the bank so she can check her savings account while the parents are, I don't know, anywhere else.
Shopping off in the city, wondering, oh, look, Santa's visiting the bank. Mm-hmm. The girls will love that.
Different times. Emerging from the vault, Ratliff saw figures out the front windows of the bank and fired a shot. Police returned fire, and all hell broke loose. But the police weren't the only ones shooting. In the mid-1920s, bank robberies were so commonplace in small Texas towns, with holdups happening three or four times per day, that the Texas Bankers Association offered a $5,000 bounty for anyone brave and bold enough to shoot a bank robber in action. This became known as the Dead Robber Award, according to Texas Monthly, with dead being the operative word. The $5,000 would only be awarded if the robber was killed.
But not 1 cent for 100 live ones.
Naturally, when rumblings of a robbery in progress at the First National Bank spilled into the streets, eager citizens rushed down there and began firing into the building.
You just have a vigilante mob.
And a very encouraged, holding a carrot in front of their vigilante mob selves.
You, seriously.
You say, hey, $5,000 now is a lot. Back then?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're going to get a bunch of people down there with guns shooting. It sounds like a terrible idea.
Plus, if it was, you know, the old towns, they probably already had guns on them. So it's not like they had to run home and get a gun and run back. They just pulled out what they had.
walked across the street to the bank. Knowing the game was up, the robbers led the 16 hostages, including the young girls, out into the alleyway and toward their getaway car. In the alley, more gunfire erupted, injuring several innocent people, including the bank's president, Alex Spears.
Of the 16 hostages, you are kind of, when you research it, it'll be like, you know, this person and this person walked out, but then they took off running. So the bank robbers couldn't hold on to any of their hostages.
No.
They clearly, as threatening as it is to have a gun on them, the hostages, with all the melee that was going on around them, every single one of them just made a break for it. It would say they tried to use her as a human shield, and she elbowed him in the face and ran off. It's just like every person,
because
name
back
after
then,
name.
Everybody had a GD gun.
That's true.
So it's not even that weird that, like, and with robberies happening three or four times per day.
God, don't go to the bank. Keep your shit in the coffee can in the attic.
Yes. Why would you even be at the bank, number one, I'm not a betting woman, but if I was, I sure as shit would be going to the bank. But yeah, I think back then it's like people were more badasses and hard, because you had to be.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was ready on the ready to shoot them a bank robber.
Also, on some level, are you kind of like, this is just Santa? Like, even though he has a gun and he's robbing the bank, can you really be that threatened when he's wearing a beard and a Santa suit and, you know, he looks like Santa?
Maybe they're underestimating him. He was tenacious.
While most of the hostages escaped, Laverne Comer and Emma Mae Robertson weren't so lucky. The two young girls were forced into the getaway car amidst the continued shootout. During the chaos, the first casualties would occur. Police Chief Bedford and Deputy George Carmichael were critically injured, later succumbing to their injuries. Ratliff and Davis were also shot, with Davis being severely injured.
Yeah, it was such a, I mean, there were guns or bullets flying, mm-hmm. and they said when Helms and Davis initially got into the car, that Helms was behind the wheel and that a restaurateur from around the block brought a shotgun from his restaurant. He's not a person. He's not a cop.
No.
And he brought a shotgun and put it in the driver's side window, put it up to his head and did not know how to unhook the safety and was like trying to click the gun. And luckily they were able to drive off. But it was like that where the brazen citizens were just walking up and were just ready to shoot a man in the face.
Because they've been told they'll get $5,000 if they do.
Yes.
$5,000 right before Christmas is going to go a long way in your restaurant.
That's true. It's like the Purge. Like people were just taking the law in their own hands.
It was lawless. I mean, the majority of the people shooting at this bank were not police.
No, statistically, there were 3 cops, one of whom had a fake gun. So everybody else was just bystanders looking for their money.
And here it is with Davis, the one guy who didn't want any shooting. He's just there because he's down on his luck. And now he's hanging on by a thread.
Got the worst of it.
Mm-hmm. With the criminals' plan quickly unraveling, they discovered another error they had made. They had forgotten to fill up the Buick with gas. Then, before they could speed away with what little they had in the tank, a citizen shot out the car's back tire. The battered Buick then took off, an angry mob of citizens close behind.
I've gotten in the car in the morning and turned it on and it goes ding and you're just enough time to get to work and you're like, fuck. But that's work. That's an everyday work. I was not planning a heist.
Yeah, they did not plan well. There's a checklist when you're going to rob a bank that you should have.
Yes.
And make sure getaway car is filled with gas is number one, maybe. Take my gun, maybe is number one. Take my number two, make sure car is filled with gas. It's starting to get a little reminiscent of the Sun Gym Gang.
Yes, where they're like, it's not that hard, let's just do it. Let's do the crime right now.
Yes.
It's hard. It's sometimes doing crime is hard.
What they didn't take into consideration was the citizens of Cisco were on one that day, and they were not going to let this rest.
They were all at the ready.
Yes. At the outskirts of town, the gang chose to ditch their busted getaway car and steal another. As 14-year-old Woody Harris drove down the road in the family's Oldsmobile, he was surprised to see a wounded Santa beside a broken-down Buick, flagging him down. When the young teen pulled over, he was even more shocked when Santa brandished a gun, ousting the family from the vehicle. Young Woody was a quick thinker, though, and snagged the keys before getting out, making the car immobile.
They said he was driving with his parents and his grandma, and you said, look at Santa!
14 years old, though!
Yes! Well, back again, it was a different time.
No, I don't think they had the DMV or
no
requirements on how. I think you could be 8 years old and drive a car down to the bank, probably.
Pretty sure if your feet can reach the pedals, that's you can true. Take the Oldsmobile down and check your savings balance.
Man, that's hilarious. So that 3 other adults at least were in this car with them. And they're like, just let Woody drive.
He's got it. Let him practice.
Yeah.
But I do like that it's the ultimate teenage troll move of like, yeah, I'll give you my car, but I'm taking the keys.
Yeah, good for him.
Ass. And they just took off running. He took the keys and they all took off and it was such a commotion that we'll see what happens. Mm.
The clueless gang quickly transferred the wounded Davis, who was now unconscious, and the sack of loot into the new car. As the posse from town grew closer, more gunfire erupted, this time hitting Hill. When the new car wouldn't start, the crew fled back to the Buick, leaving behind Davis and, unbeknownst to them, the money. When the vigilantes caught up with the car, they discovered Davis and the loot. Satisfied they had recovered the bank's money, they gave up their pursuit of Santa and the others.
Another thing on the checklist, as you run away, don't leave $2 million behind.
The whole reason you did this, the whole reason you went to all of this trouble, you have just abandoned.
Maybe instead of a potato sack, you bring a backpack. Something that's attached to
something
you.
Something more manageable. Yeah.
Can't leave it behind.
And they're just driving down the road. Have you ever, I'm sure you've had flat tires. It's very hard to drive on them. Clunking down the road. It's
also
hard.
An
they're
old
unwieldy.
Buick.
Yeah.
And it's those things are like boats and there's probably no power steering. It's just like, I can't imagine. Mm-mm. Yeah. They're just glug, 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 glug. And these poor kids, 10 and 12 years old, are like, oh, we're with the dumbest kidnappers ever. So we're not going to get murdered, but we might die due to negligence because they're just terrible.
Eventually, the men ditched the Buick and the child hostages near a farm, warning the girls to hide their eyes while they made their getaway. The bandits then ran into the brush, but not before the girls saw where they went. When officers arrived, the girls told them which way the crooks had gone and identified Santa as Marshall Ratliff.
This is the first in a string of many hostages that just finger them right away.
Oh,
he
yikes.
Took his Santa outfit off.
That's a choice word.
You know what I mean?
I know.
In the old 20s way, they fingered. Yeah, yes.
I've always found that word used in that context to be unsettling.
Well, yeah, it sounds dirty.
It's one of those words that you're just like,
if you say,
yikes.
The children fingered the Santa bandit, it sounds terrible. But apparently he said, close your eyes, and then took off the Santa outfit. And then the littlest girl, Emma, just opened her eyes and looked right at him.
I mean, again, your face. They're not the smartest. A Patreon pointed out how I, in the last episode, said, you blew your load on that whole suit. And I'm like, sometimes we just say things and we don't realize until listening back, like, oh yeah, that made it sound like Bigfoot jizzed all over us.
Yes. Like, not you blew your wad, but I don't think wad is like wad of cash.
Yeah.
Not better. It's
and
not
wad
better.
Could also be load, which could also be
better.
What we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, if someone blew their load on a Bigfoot suit and fingered Santa, it is a real different Christmas.
That is a movie that needs to be made, stat.
Probably, ask Tommy, it's probably on the internet already.
Oh yeah, for sure. Hanging on by a thread, Davis was taken to a Fort Worth hospital. When he came to, he refused to snitch. However, after being given a bad prognosis by doctors, he told police everything before succumbing to his injuries. In addition to Davis's death and two police officers dying, five bystanders had also been injured in the mayhem. The bank itself was also riddled with more than 200 bullet holes.
Not that crime ever pays, but it's especially sad in a situation like this where it's not like they made off with this great heist. They didn't even keep the loot. Mm-hmm. They've killed all these people. They've made this huge mess. They've traumatized these kids. And they're leaving a trail of horrific destruction in their wake.
And they're kind of
for
idiots.
For what? Yeah, they're idiots. For what? It's like pointless.
Yeah. 200 bullet holes. That's Mm-mm. what's also so jaw-dropping about this whole thing is the citizens are all shooting.
Yes.
They realize other citizens, including children, are in this bank that they're just blindly
Correct.
Shooting into. 200, and from what I read, a lot of the newspapers were like, 200 is a low estimate. Like, what are you doing? You're going to shoot your own.
One, I don't understand. So, like, there's three bank robbers and say there's 30 citizens. Again, probably conservative estimate, because once the lady's running through the street screaming they're robbing the bank, you know, it's like a swarm. And they're all shooting at the bank robbers. Perhaps they're inspired by justice. But if they're inspired by the $5,000... Even if all three bank robbers get shot dead, what are you going to divide 15,000 by everybody that was in the crowd? Like, how do you know who shot what?
Yeah, no one would know who that goes to.
Well, that's not fair to distribute the death money.
As the manhunt continued over the next 6 days, Christmas came and went. For many children, having witnessed Santa hold up the local bank had proven confusing. While attending a Christmas Eve service at a church in Eastland, one little boy seemed to speak for everyone when Jolly Santa strolled into the church. Seeing the man in the red suit, the boy timidly asked,
Santa Claus, why did you rob that bank?
According to Texas Escapes.
That is pretty sad.
Christmas was a lot different that year with parents having to explain, I don't want to set out cookies for Santa. No. What if he doesn't like him and he comes in my room and
He's
shoots
got a gun.
Me?
Santa Claus killed the police chief. I'm scared. That's a much, you know, you hear about the Santas in other countries that they like beat you with reeds or put you in a burlap sack. This is the most threatening, I think, child behavior Santa of if you're good, you know, Santa will bring you a toy. If you're bad, he is an actual murderer.
He is going to kidnap you and drive you across the state of Texas.
Don't worry. There will be no gas and a tire will be flat. So you will be released in a field.
Meanwhile, Bad Santa and his crew of criminal elves continued to elude authorities as officers from 10 counties searched for them. Ratliff, badly bleeding from his injuries, waited in the woods while Helms and Hill stole a farmer's car and kidnapped his son before picking up Ratliff and heading into town to steal yet another car. When they let the farmer's son go, he immediately went to the police, who took off after the men.
Again, I'm not here to tell you that you should kill your witnesses, but as soon as they let these people go, let him go far away from town.
Why did they even kidnap him in the first place? What's
they
the
said
point?
They wanted to take him for, quote, insurance.
Yeah.
Leave him. Just
take
the car.
And that's why they took the girls, too, because they thought, oh, nobody's going to shoot at us if we've got these two young girls. Wrong. Very wrong.
No one
gave a shit. But yeah, they're also, why you got to keep stealing so many cars? Just stay in one car.
Pick a good one and stick with it. And if they wouldn't have taken the son, they could have just, instead of going into town and trying to steal another car, just drive off in the truck.
Yeah.
But they were not good planners. And poor Ratliff, I say poor, I mean, he's obviously shot people and is murderer, but he was got shot in the jaw. Mm. And that just sounds so blech to
that
me.
That Santa beard is going to go red. He's going to be a ginger real quick.
Ginger Santa. Get all stuck to his face.
Mm-hmm. After several more stolen cars and firefights with the authorities, Ratliff, Helms, and Hill were ambushed by Sheriff Foster of Young County as they attempted to cross the Brazos River near South Bend. Texas Ranger Cy Bradford managed to shoot all three men. While Helms and Hill managed to escape into the woods, Ratliff fell to the ground, and Santa was finally captured. 3 days later, Helms and Hill were also taken into custody in Graham, Texas. The two men were wounded, starving, and went without a fight. All three men were booked into the Eastland County Jail, ending the largest manhunt the state of Texas has ever seen.
Yeah, even though it was nice on the 23rd, the weather took a turn and it was shitty and cold and raining and they're bleeding and hanging out in the woods.
As it does in Texas. I'd like the saying, wait 5 minutes if you don't like the weather.
Mm-hmm. It turns. It may be sunny when you rob a bank, but it's going to be shitty when you hide in the woods. It's another saying.
That's anything's a euphemism if you put a little twang on it. But yeah, can you imagine being in the woods, not shot and full of food sucks. Mm-hmm. But having been shot, it's cold, it's rainy, you're hungry. You've been driving around in 15 different fucking cars.
Well, and you just feel like jail's fine. I will take jail, thank you.
I'll go to jail, please. I just want a hot meal and get out of these clothes.
Henry Helms, Robert Hill, and Marshall Ratliff were each charged with murder, bank robbery, and car theft. Helms attempted to claim insanity, but was sentenced to death for his crimes. He was executed by electric chair on September 6, 1929. Hill was given 99 years in prison. Not wanting to accept his fate, he attempted to escape on three separate occasions. Each time, he was recaptured and sent back. After serving over 20 years, Hill was paroled. He went on to live a law-abiding life in West Texas until his death in 1996. He claimed to have later made friends with Woody Harris, the young boy whose car the gang attempted to steal.
What a world. First of all, he escaped three times and they still paroled him and let him go.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, how are you getting out three times? Texas prisons back then seemed like somebody just leaves a gate open. You could just crawl out a window. It didn't seem
the bars are quite far apart.
Yeah, something was going on. The keys were always just like a little too close to where you could get them. But you know what? Good for you, Woody Harris, for being like, befriend your foes.
I'm going to make peace. He was probably traumatized by Santa, and Robert Hill was not Santa. They he was the youngest of the gang, and everyone said he was very baby-faced and had a sweet face. So maybe he wasn't, by the time he got out, I guess he spent about 40 years in the old slammer, that by the time he got out, he, was a changed man and was ready to live his life. I believe he changed his name. He lived under a different name to escape.
It's also a cool story if you're Woody Harris. If you're like, when I was 14, and then later, now I'm friends with the man.
We play poker on Thursday nights at the VFW.
On January 27th, 1928, Ratliff was also sentenced to 99 years in prison for armed robbery. Then, despite no one being able to testify that they actually saw him fire a gun in the bank, Ratliff was sentenced to death on March 30th, 1928, for the deaths of Chief Bedford and Officer Carmichael.
I'd have to go and see the evolution of Texas criminal code since the 20s, but nowadays it's felony murder because people died in the course of your commission of a felony. So, it's even though you're not the one that shot them, too bad, so sad, you shouldn't have been committing the felony, is the public policy reason behind felony murder. Although, in Texas, you cannot get sentenced to death for felony murder, so things were loose in the 20s.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they were using the electric chair still. For sure, yeah. They were loose. It is interesting that the other ones didn't also get tried for that.
Yeah, I mean, Henry...
with that, since they... Nobody... Like, we don't know the citizens shooting in. They didn't know who was shooting out.
Yeah, and that's... So Henry did. I mean, Henry Helms, that's why he was executed, too, was for the murders. I think, again, Robert had a baby face and maybe rolled on some people, but in theory, they didn't do a lot of bullet analysis back then. Who's to say a citizen didn't shoot
exactly.
one of them?
Yeah.
So that's, and that's the really sad thing is that, you know, it wasn't like, okay, the cops ambushed and all the citizens hit the floor. It was just a swarm of bullets.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, Ratliff and his gang caused those that swarm, and
that's
so
true.
They really caused the chief's death. So I don't, maybe not.
If not for them, Chief Bedford and Officer Carmichael would not have been down at the bank having to defend the bank and all of this. So
yeah, they were the proximate cause of their death at the very least.
Just after Helms was executed via electric chair in early September, Ratliff began acting strange and claimed he was insane and paralyzed. He refused to speak, only mumbling incoherent sounds. Assuming he was faking it, jailers would position his body at bedtime, then check in the morning to see whether he had moved. He never did. His mother requested a lunacy hearing before the court in Huntsville, Texas, where the state prison was, and still is, located. However, the residents of Eastland County weren't having it. Feeling the pressure from the citizens, the judge extradited Ratliff to the Eastland County Jail.
He committed to the bit. They said they stood him up. They stood him upright and they dropped him and he fell on his face and he didn't flinch and he didn't put his hands up to stop himself, that he ragdolled and hit his head on the ground.
He's pulling an Edward Norton.
He's method. I could not remember how someone positioned me, and I definitely don't have the wherewithal to completely sit still all night, but it was interesting how his insanity began shortly after he saw they were not fucking around and they killed Helms.
Mm-hmm. What is that movie with Edward Norton? Damn it.
Fight Club?
No, the one
Death
where
to
he...
Smoochie.
The one
I'm
where
just gonna
he...
yell Edward Norton movies.
The one where he fakes the whole thing being...
Is it the one... I know exactly what you're talking about. And at the end, he's like, it was me the whole time. I can't remember. It's not Kevin Spacey, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Son of a bitch. I mean, we both have computers and we're choosing not to look this up. Because it's so rewarding when you figure it out on your own. When it clicks in your brain. Oh, I almost had it. Oh my God, everyone's screaming right now.
My grandmother would say, go through the alphabet.
Oh, I do that when I'm trying to remember people's names.
Oh, yeah, the same.
What
same.
Is it? Did you? Oh, I thought you found it.
Oh, I looked it up, but I'm looking it up right now. Hold on.
Oh, I just had it again.
I want you to get it.
Oh, thank you.
Why does Edward Norton filmography have its own Wikipedia page? Oh, I got it.
Tell me what it starts with.
P.
Primal Fear.
Done.
Nice.
Ding, 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 ding.
Not as good as if I totally got it on my own, but still a bit rewarding. Scratch that itch. That movie is so fucking good.
It's Richard Gere, not Kevin Spacey.
Richard Gere, yeah. And I'm Richard sorry Gere. If you haven't seen it, but Jesus Christ, it's been out for like 20-something years.
Yeah, so. We have no... It was 1996.
I think the limitations of spoilers is up. But that movie is so good.
Earlier when you said Edward Norton, I just thought you meant he was like a method actor. I forgot about that movie.
Oh.
It's like, oh yeah, he's just method.
I think he's great.
He's a great actor.
I have not heard anything to... Anytime now I say... because I'm always like... Anytime I say somebody's great, if I haven't gone through... Scoured the internet to see if anything's happened, then I'm like...
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to get an email about why we shouldn't like Edward
Norton.
You can't
like... Edward Norton is a dick for the following reasons. I'm like, God damn it.
So
I can't keep
just
up.
Full disclosure, if he's done something untoward... Or was part of a movement that we don't support, then I apologize. I don't know. But as far as his acting chops, great.
Yeah, I do try to keep a running list in my head, but sometimes it's really
hard.
It's
too long
now.
It's way too long. No, who has anybody supposed to keep up with it?
You can't.
But yeah, much like Edward Norton, the Ratliff committed to the bit.
To the very end.
I mean, I guess if you have nothing else to do and it's your life on the line, you're dug in, man.
And his mom was fully supportive and was like, my son's got something wrong with him. When they had him in court, he would mumble like the same few phrases over and over again and wouldn't make eye contact and would kind of stare off. And the kind of problem is, if you're going to go in front of a lunacy hearing, which is an unfortunate term for it, they will have a doctor examine you. And it's like he had a hodgepodge of symptoms that aren't really all, you know, it's not like, oh, he has, you know, he's gone catatonic. It was various behaviors. What is it on Seinfeld when George's arm is moving and the doctor goes, I think you're faking it. Like, they're going to get the doctor in there and have him go, I think you're making it up.
Yeah.
It's not a real thing that you
But it's
have.
Also, he's exhibiting symptoms that one can't really argue with because you're like, well, I mean, he won't speak. That doesn't seem like anything is wrong with mm-hmm. him, like that we can see.
Mm-hmm.
But who are we to say that he is? There isn't something wrong, you know?
The fucked up part is that we'll see. It was a ruse, but let's for a moment pretend it was legitimate. The jailers dropped him on his face.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't. They had. How else are you going to know? It's like, how do you know if a cell phone is going to pass the test unless you drop it off the building to see if it cracks?
Throw it off the roof.
Mm-hmm. In his new cell, Ratliff continued to feign insanity and paralysis. The jailers fully believed it and would bathe him, feed him, and even take Ratliff to the bathroom. They would soon learn, though, that it was all an act. On the night of November 18, 1929, a jailer accidentally left a cell door open. Ratliff, suddenly mobile, took off out of his cell and grabbed a pistol from a nearby desk, knocking a bullet loose in the process. On his way out of the jail, he held another jailer at gunpoint and demanded the keys. The two fought, and Ratliff shot the man 5 times. A second jailer emerged and also fought Ratliff for the gun. Successfully taking the pistol away from Ratliff, the jailer pointed the gun at the fallen Santa and pulled the trigger. However, because the 6th bullet had been knocked out of the gun, Ratliff lived. Sadly, the first jailer involved in the chaos was not as lucky and eventually died from his injuries.
Isn't that so wild that he didn't even take the bullet out purposefully? He was just grabbing it and mm-hmm. knocking it around, and it happened to save his life.
Yeah. It's also, maybe don't leave a cell door open. I don't know. Like, but he committed to this bit for so long, knowing that at some point there was going to be a window and he was going to have to take it. And he was on his toes, man. Mm-hmm. As soon as he saw that window, boom, he went for it.
I wonder, too, if they thought, because these jailers were nice and were bathing him and lifting him. And if they thought, it's fine if you leave the door open because he's paralyzed.
Yeah.
Like, what do we really care?
Exactly.
But if you were really sneaky, what you would have done is have like a net on the other side and leave the cell door open. And then when he jumps up to run out, you catch him in the net and be like, gotcha, bitch.
We
knew you
weren't.
Yes. The whole time.
They needed a giant net.
You faker. Don't all prisons have giant nets?
I think so. I mean, in the cartoons they do. So I imagine that they do. Yeah, in the 20s.
I've been watching the new Animaniacs, so that's my frame of reference.
Oh, there you go. Upon hearing of the news, the next day nearly 2,000 citizens descended on the jail. Avenging the jailer's death, they dragged Ratliff from his cell, tying his hands and feet, and proceeded towards an empty lot beside the local theater. The mob attempted to hang Ratliff from a power pole, but the rope broke. Undeterred, one citizen headed to the hardware store for something stronger. The second attempt with the new rope worked. According to the book Santa Claus Bank Robbery, A True Crime Saga in Texas by Twee Snyder, as he was strung up, Ratliff's last words were,
"Forgive me, boys."
The crowd then hung him 15 feet in the air, where he died at 9:55 p.m. on November 19, 1929. Though a grand jury was formed, no one was ever tried in connection with the lynching.
There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
Well, they overpowered a jailer, allegedly, or did the jailer just be like,
I think he left the door open again.
So those doors are they're swinging both ways in the old jail. They said they stripped him naked, so he was naked, but for a sack on his head, that the theater.
The red Idaho potatoes.
That's the potato sack. The adjacent theater was having a play put up called The Noose, which is just such a weird coinky dink. Also, the rope broke. So they all stood there while someone went
to
the hardware store.
Yeah.
Did they buy it at the hardware store? Or do you go in and you'd be like, hey, I need some rope. And then you explain what it's for. And the hardware owner's like, hell yeah.
I bet the hardware store wasn't that far from where this is taking place. And if a mob has formed,
let him have
stringing it. Someone up, they know they're coming. They had the rope at the ready when the guy walked in saying he needed a new rope. But also, much like with the shooting and the cops are just like encouraging people to kill bank robbers, no one was ever tried for this.
No. And I believe they hung him at like 9:30 and it took him like 20-something minutes to go. And I wonder as a member of the crowd, if you feel, because I know it's easy to get hyped up in a crowd mentality, a mob mentality. Mm-hmm. If you're like, get him, get the, which freaks me out. A mob mentality is one of the scariest things to me because there's no rationalization, there's no reason. But I wonder after he's gone, and the crowd begins to disperse, if you're not forced then to go home and look at yourself in the mirror and be like, oh, God, I was one of those people that did that. Or who knows? Maybe they were like, hell yeah, I did what was right, you know, and it's just like totally wrapped up in their own beliefs. But I wonder once like this, the spell of the mob mentality is broken, if there is a sense of remorse.
Once the adrenaline's gone, I'm sure there's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B.
Yeah.
It's like when you get into... If you're mad at someone and you, in the heat of the moment, say something that might in the moment feel good because you get something off your chest and you hurt that person and, you know, and that was your intention. At the moment, it feels good. But then once you've calmed down and you look back on it, you're filled with regret. Mm-hmm. You wish you could go back. You can't undo those things. So
it wasn't worth it. You know, what have I done? Yeah, that's just it's so. And granted, Texas has a. long, as much of the South and the United States, a long and sad history of lynchings and of these mob situations. And it's just the psychology behind it is at once scary and also fascinating of why people get. And I think you see it today with like political rally, you know, when people get whipped up and riled up that there's no reason, and almost the anonymity of a mob, that you're just another person, you know, standing shoulder to shoulder. They're not going to. Yeah, I watched the new Borat movie and it's like that. Where
I think
the safety of people in a crowd yelling certain things because they don't think they can be singled out. So it's an interesting mentality.
I think 2020 has shown us a lot about mob mentality, maybe more than any other year.
For
with
sure.
Protest and the election and just, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's definitely safety in numbers, air quotes, as far as their mindset.
Holler at us on the show if you got a book about like the mentality of being in a crowd. I'd love to read, almost like a Malcolm Gladwell. I need something digestible. I don't want a book, like a psychology book, but like, you know, I don't want like a textbook, but I'd love to hear like a pop, you know, a pop science kind of thing on why people feel that way. I don't know.
I think I recently read an article maybe out of the New York Times about that. Yeah, I feel like a quick Google search
will
give us some good answers there. But it is definitely scary. And to be him and to have just a mob of people wanting you dead, you're like, well, there's no way I'm getting out of this.
No, as much as you've escaped before, you're by far outnumbered.
Even though the jail is right there with police officers.
That's the scarier thing, too. Of like, you're in charge. And at that point, no, they're not.
No, they're not. The next day, thousands of people came out to view Ratliff's corpse that had been displayed at a local furniture store. His mother then took her son's body and had him buried at Olivet Cemetery in Fort Worth. That's another weird thing, is back then, they would, as like a point of pride so everyone could come see, like, look at the good work you did. We're going to set up his dead body at a furniture store, just lay him out on a couch.
And then do you think they sold the couch?
And then we're going to, probably for more than what they had. That's a good point.
It's
people
technically
like
murderabilia.
Used, yeah.
But it's murderabilia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's weird psyche. That
it is.
Kind of.
To this day, the robbery of the First National Bank in Cisco, Texas, remains one of the most infamous crimes the state has ever seen. Famed Texas columnist Boyce House, who witnessed the entire thing, wrote that it was
the most spectacular crime in the history of the Southwest, surpassing any in which Billy the Kid or the James Boys had ever figured.
According to Texas Escapes. While it is, unsurprisingly, a new building, the bank still stands and even features a large mural of the robbery and newspaper clippings and pictures of the many people that were involved. For the small town of Cisco, it has become a point of pride, something forever ingrained in their folklore. In 1967, the organization now known as the Texas Historical Commission even placed a medallion on the bank commemorating the robbery, according to the Texas State Historical Association.
Yeah, they got a plaque on there and everything.
They're proud of it, man. Everything's bigger in Texas.
I guess so.
Including our pride for bank robberies that happen in the small towns where we live. Yeah, because they said, you know, if you grow up in small towns in Texas, sometimes you don't leave. You're born there, and that's where where you die there, too. So for a lot of these residents, they, you know, they were there, or it gets passed down over generations of, like, grandma was down at the bank the day Santa came in and robbed it. So it becomes, like, this story in their family that they're proud of, and it's fun to tell.
And it's true. And even, like, Emma Mae Robertson, she was only 10, and she testified, you know, and told them everything that happened. So I'm sure for years, you know, people wanted to hear her story. And there's a couple of interviews online with residents that were very elderly in the 80s to 90s when the interviews were filmed that were like, I was 5 years old at the time. And, like, they all, it's funny because what do you remember from when you were five, right? Like, not a lot.
No.
Would you remember this because it was, or would you just have a vague, vague memory of, like, a crowd and stuff? But it's just funny, people that were really little at the time, you know, that lived into the 80s and 90s and beyond, were like, I remember vividly the day Santa robbed the bank. And it's like, there's no way. You know?
I don't know. I have a terrible memory, so I can't really even remember, was I five when something happened? Or, like, I might have a memory. And if I told my mom this is what I remember, she could be like, oh, yeah, you were five when that happened. Mm-hmm. But I have no concept of how old I was. But I have friends, and my brother can remember shit like back to when they were four or five easily. But it's a good question of if something like this that's so monumental happens, it's probably more likely to stick in your brain. But also, are you just remembering stories people have told you about it?
Or, you know, when you were little, it happened and someone said, like, when I drowned in the ball pit at the Chuck E. Cheese, my aunt asked me right then what happened. And then the next day, someone asked me what happened. So then you're remembering the last time you told it, like we talked about before. So, you know, you're remembering something. It's just a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Yeah. But is what even is real? What's reality? What's a real
good
memory?
Good question. I ask myself that every day, Heather. So what do we think?
Man, again, it's not that you want to ever see the criminals get away with money, but a situation like this, it's just so senseless that they go in, they cause all this chaos, they take all these lives, and there's, for literally, there's no purpose. There's no end.
No. Yeah. Idiots. Even if they'd taken the money with them and not left it in the car with Davis, they still inevitably got caught, so it wouldn't have mattered.
I can't imagine. This is not Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, and they're going to go, who even, again, that movie was out in the 70s, spoiler alert. They didn't, you know, all bank robbers, I think, meet a pretty heinous ending, but you think, okay, I'm going to take all this money and move to Mexico, or take all this money and move to Canada. Maybe they would have, I don't think ever, there was not an ending of the story ever where they got away, just based solely upon their inadequacies and stupidities.
They did not have the checklist.
No, get your checklist.
Get your checklist. And if 3 to 4 robberies are happening a day, it doesn't even have to be that great of a checklist, because clearly people are overwhelmed with bank robberies. Like, you started off strong. The Santa thing was a strong choice.
Yeah.
And then just very quickly, I think a big reason they weren't going to get away with anything was because of the dead robber clause.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have 3 people trying to rob a bank in a town of 8,000 that all have guns down at the bank trying to kill them.
And especially, it wasn't like they went right when the bank opened or right when it was fixing to close. They went at 12:45 in the afternoon, which was like the most busy part of the day. So there's a shitload of people around. And when you got the guy that runs the diner with a shotgun in your face, like ready to blast you, there's no way you're going to get out of this successfully.
No.
They're lucky that they got out alive, frankly. I'm surprised with that many bullets that it wasn't them that took the bullets. But I think they were using the customers and the workers as human shields and to get in their car.
Yeah. In the end, it might have been better for them had they met their fate that day.
Yeah.
Especially for Ratliff.
Yeah, it's a pretty grisly end, especially mm-hmm. with the two ropes, because you get the time, the waiting time in between.
Yeah, that's rough.
And it would have been better for the jailer that he killed.
Yeah. Well, if you lived in Cisco, I won't say when this happened, because...
Who knows about our demo?
Probably aren't alive, I would imagine.
Just barely. Probably wouldn't remember it.
But you know what? If you were, and you know how to listen to podcasts... Please email us, because I'm impressed, and I do want to meet you. Yeah, but if you currently live in Cisco, and I'm sure you know about this and stuff, let us know. Let us know what everybody's saying about this down there.
I always like when people message us and be like, my grandma was there, like my mm-hmm. grandpa was the sheriff or whatever. So, yeah, send us your
someone
stories.
Emailed us today that their dad is best friends with Bob Giblin.
Oh, look at that.
And sent pictures.
The picture you chose for the social media post of Bob Gimlin, look at that outfit. I mean, he is sharp.
He's a rodeo cowboy through and through. Oh, once a rodeo cowboy, always a rodeo cowboy.
Oh, it's something that you're born with. Like, you don't grow into it. The rodeo cowboy life chooses you.
Yes, it's true. Yes.
That's hilarious that they're friends. I love that. Yeah, we love a good personal connection.
Always, always. We love providing Sinisterhood to you at no cost, so if you like what you hear, consider supporting the show by donating to our Patreon. We're a small operation, creating the show for you by researching, writing, recording, and producing it ourselves. Any amount is sincerely appreciated and helps offset the cost of making and hosting the show.
As a thank you, you'll also get some sweet perks like ad-free episodes, a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group for those in the Rolling the Airwaves tier, a special shout-out on the show, a monthly bonus mini-sode, and patron-exclusive audio and video content, including fun new additions we added in, just like our wheel episodes, where we spin an actual game show wheel and talk about topics that you guys have sent to us.
You also now have the fun perk of access to our Discord server, where you can connect with other fans in real time and discuss the latest in true crime, share personal ghost stories, or just post adorable pictures of your pets. We'll also be hopping on occasionally and hosting monthly Q&As where you can ask us all your burning questions.
For our patrons not in the U.S., you now have the option to pay in pounds or euros, saving you the cost of conversion fees. Annual memberships for tiers are also now available. Those that select this option will be rewarded with a free month of membership.
For more details on all of this and specific member tiers, visit Sinisterhood.com and click Patreon on the top banner. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pictures of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Keep those pictures coming. We have very cozy, lovely, wintry stuff for you to buy in the shop, including beanies, hoodies, and long-sleeve tees. So if you want to get some cool Sinisterhood swag like t-shirts, mugs, totes, and even clothes for your kiddos, visit Sinisterhood.com and click on Shop on the top banner.
The best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood Christy.
Yes. And we don't ever talk about how on our social media we post, you mentioned him a second ago, we post pictures of whatever episode we released that week that are of interest. And we also post our favorite quotes from the episodes.
Yeah. And we do little clips from the show. And then Christy always amasses some excellent photos that go along with it. So we talked about Bigfoot last time. Mm-hmm. So our actual photos. This one will have, I'm sure, pictures of the perps that did it and the Santa Claus outfit. I love the wanted picture that they used, which was just a stock picture of Santa. And also, when we send out Patreon envelopes, we send a little behind-the-scenes video. So it has all kinds of fun stuff on our stories. Plus, you get most up-to-date information on all the stuff that's happening for the show. It's the best way for us to make announcements to you.
Yes, absolutely. As far as personal social media, you can follow me on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace and on Twitter at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on Twitter at MCK versus the world and on Instagram at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Tony Cade,
Lindley Floyd,
Brittany Ezel,
Mike in Ireland,
Hannah.
Melissa Hardesty.
Catherine McCord.
Shannon McCubbins.
Tina Herda.
Leah Pandazi.
Dorianne.
Ashley Letzkow.
Amy Kinsley.
J.R. Smith, GTR 92.
Amanda Pearson Green.
Mary Doc Savage.
Erica Stella.
Amanda Gilliford.
Jen Walker.
Ty.
Erica Manch.
Beth Fordyce.
Sarah Anderson.
Lori Walls.
Allison Farhat.
Molly Dressler.
Linda Mizek.
Rachel.
Diane Patterson.
Kathleen Ryan.
Jungle Bat.
Erica Perez.
Frankie.
Alex Osborne.
Sarah McIntosh.
Edith Rios.
Donna E. Hernandez.
Laura Trapp.
Jesse.
Keith Volker.
Ariel Collins.
Cassia Finn.
Emily Gallen.
Devin Nicole Ramsdell.
Athena Zanis.
Sherry Avery.
Tamara Kroll.
Emma Fielding.
Katie Bellafontaine.
Christy Maylett.
Ellie.
Sarah Jervis.
Melanie Kamai.
Amy.
Liz Cunningham.
Betty Lou.
Sarah Harris.
Kathleen S. Whitis.
Jessica Shelton.
Persia Rose.
Grace Clabo.
April Hansberry.
Jessica Sincall.
Naomi.
Katarina Rush.
Paula Holmes.
Bronna Fitzgerald.
Courtney Ivis.
Tara Ann O'Shea.
Jess Fisher.
Jennifer R.
Pamela Assad.
Misty Andrews.
Shayla Leibarger.
Alicia and Sierra.
Thank you guys so much for supporting this show. We couldn't do this without you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Thank you during this holiday times for giving us so much love and support. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
And now it's time for our thank you corner. We have several thank yous today.
So many
thank yous. First and foremost, I would like to thank Marissa Cole for making these amazing stickers that say double bangin' all day long.
I cannot wait to get mine.
Which is, it's in the studio. I have it, so I'm showing it digitally. But it's a purple cross of gavels, and it's incredible. So
our
thank you, Marissa.
Double banging all day long. Love it.
Also,
Amber Wilcox, who gave me a cryptid book for Ella and Simon, plus a Loch Ness monster plush doll at the Dallas show. It's so cute. Ella loves it. It has a little Scottish hat and scarf. It's super
tan.
Cute. Yes. Thank you so much.
And Jackie from the UK, you sent us some amazing cryptid stickers. The Nessie had to go to Ella because she loves Nessie. And then we got a chupacabra and a Bigfoot, as well as a very cute Mothman postcard. So thank you very much. And Alexandra Pearson sent some magic boxes, as well as some gingerbread and teacup ornaments.
I show the teacup ornament and the gingerbread ornament were for Ella and Simon. They loved them. Got a little teacup, too. A tiny little teacup. And
me too.
I'll tell you what, this magic box, I haven't figured it out yet. But she said, go to her Instagram to watch a video on how to do it. So I'm going to do it because I'm very curious how I get into these little sections of this box. I'm about to hide all sorts of stuff in there.
It's a gift that keeps on giving because it's a box, but with mysteries as well. So we love it.
Keeps you entertained and keeps all your things safe. Thank you guys so much. We so appreciate every time you guys send us anything. It makes us feel so loved and special. And Ella and Simon say thank you as well.
And thanks from me, too. And that teacup ornament is currently the only ornament on my tree. So thank you. The tree is up. Like, it's in protest. The tree is up. But it is naked. I mean, it's pre-lit. But it's a nude tree, but for one single ornament.
You
know
what?
Thank you so much for that, Alexandra.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.